Okay, we're all set. Well, good morning.
Good morning.
How are we doing?
Very good.
Or should I say, how you all doing? So today what I thought I'd do is just give you a little story from Australia. As I have heard from everybody, actually it's Australia, that's the way you say it, Australia. I think that Fred's got it down pat by now. Well, the story begins like this. There was a koala up this big gum tree, and he's doing something he should not be doing. He was smoking. Anyway, this lizard came up, looked up, and said, "Hey, koala, what are you doing?" "I'm having a smoke," he says. "You want a smoke? I've got plenty up here." So the lizard says, "Yeah, sure." Goes up. And after a couple of cigarettes, the lizard's feeling a little bit giddy. So he says, "Listen, I'm going to go down the river for a drink." So he goes to the river for a drink, loses his footing, and falls in the water. Anyway, overcomes this crocodile, collects him on his snout, and flips him back on the bank. Anyway, what happens is that the crocodile says, "Hey, what's up with you, young fella? You shouldn't be falling down like that. Someone agile like you." He says, "See that big gum tree over there? I was up there with koala having a few cigarettes, and I kind of sort of fell in because I was feeling a little bit giddy." "He's having some cigarettes? Do you think he'd share?" "Well, yeah, he's a kind bloke just over there." So the crocodile goes over, climbs half up, looking up, and he says, "Hey, koala." Koala looks down, drops his cigarette, and he says, "Hey, how much water did you drink anyway?" So that's a little story from Australia. It was towards the feast in 2004 that Fred asked me if I could set up an office in Sydney. We had a little bit of a burnout down south. And by the way, there's the three principal cities, I'd say, and Perth as well. But on the east side is Brisbane, which is higher. Sydney's in the middle. And Melbourne is down there, you know. Anyway, as soon as Fred said, "Hey, you know, you should really try and find a couple to run the office." And I thought, oh no, because I've been in business all my life. And I thought, two people cannot really handle this function properly. I mean, I like professionalism, and I thought it's time to look for a team. And so that's exactly what we did. The example that's shown in Exodus 18 is actually what I looked at. And that was Jethro. When he came and saw Moses stand and judge the people from the morning to the night, he said, "What are you doing?" He said, "What do you mean what I'm doing? I'm judging the people. They come and they ask for judgment and I decide between one and the other." He says, "No, what are you doing? You're going to wear yourself out. You can't do all this." So what he said is what? You got to what? You got to look for people that are able to do the job. The difficult stuff you can do. Now here, what I want to say is, there was one time I went to a seminar, and it was the most expensive seminar I've ever been to. It cost me $1,000 a day. But that's including travel to Bali before it was bombed. Anyway, so one of the things I learnt there was there was a language expert, and what she did was she told us about the right distance between people to discuss things properly for business to happen, and what you've got to say, the percentage of what's said by one party and by another party. And so she recounted to us a time when she was one of the key people in this big deal, billions of dollars worth business between an American consortium and an Arab consortium. Anyway, they were there at the meeting, And what happened was that she didn't say too much. And finally, the Arab group said, well, excuse me, what's so-and-so here for? Well, she's here to make sure that there's no problems, no hiccups, because what would happen is if someone is dominating the conversation, she'd interject with a question and direct the communication across the other way to balance things up. There's actually a science to it, you see. Anyway, after this big deal meeting, what happened was that they said, they explained, this is what she does, and they looked and smiled and said, hey, do you pay her much? Yeah, we sure do. Well, you could have saved your money. You didn't need her. And that is when she was effective. If she had to work hard, she wasn't effective. Now, you know, that's what I like to do, not work hard. So I guess that explains, you know, what I do. But basically what we did was we chose four directors. We started a new entity, an entity to conduct business in Australia, legal business, and we called it BTM, Biblical Truth Ministries. We chose two directors. They were Mr. Gregory Paxton and Mr. David Makata, as well as two American directors, which were Mr. Fred Coulter and Mr. Jim... What's your surname, Jim? Mr. Jim Hiles. And so I had two accountants, two Australian accountants. They're professional people. They know what's going on. They were quite skilled, knowledgeable, and understanding in business. And then I looked for a secretary. You see, what we did was we got a central number. I said, Fred, this won't do. If we got a phone number that changes every now and then, how do you know? You need continuity, because someone might read something that was advertised years back and they're led to the wrong place. So we got one central phone number that's redirected anywhere to wherever we want in Australia. And that's the same thing for the post office. P.O. Box 1, it's P.O. 152, Sydney 2001. That can be redirected wherever we want in Australia. So that never, the address, the phone number, never needs to change if we need to change our business address. So the one that we chose as a secretary was David McCarter's wife, Marjorie. She's a lovely lady. Now imagine this. You've got grandchildren to look after, you're running to and fro, you've got an elderly mother that you've got to look after as well, and a sick husband, and you're looking after the affairs of the church. I mean, she does a fantastic job. She keeps the lists. We often send out requests, and she puts it all together and lets the various departments, whether it's books, whether it's tapes, CD, not tape, we don't have any tapes anymore, CD, she lets them know. She also does banking, receives our mail and so on. A wonderful secretary. And as Fred mentioned, if we had to bring everybody together in one spot, we'd pay a lot of money for office space, equipment, right? And this way, we've got plenty of office space, plenty of equipment and different people's homes through their courtesy and their love to serve the brethren. And next we have a lovely lady called Ivica Baker. Now, she is in the bookmailing department. You know, I asked her because I was thinking about it, and I thought, maybe you could do this. And you know what? She said, my previous profession was mailing out books. She would package them and mail them. And she wonderfully and courteously has her home as a storehouse for the books. She's got a spare granny flat and she keeps all our books over there. She watches, she makes sure that there's not too moist, and she worries about them. And I say, look, don't you think you've got, you know, too many if we get this pallet of books? Don't you think there's too many in your house? And she says, no, they're good books. They are God's work. I love them. Even if they're going to be in my lounge room, I don't care. So it's a wonderful attitude. And then we've got a guy called Ronald Whitford. Now, Ron is our CD man, and he's assisted by his wonderful wife, Kay. And he also has a lovely lady in Tasmania called Alice Richardson. Now, what she does is she puts together through the year, she does the archives, and she puts together through the year all the sermons that are given through the year, and guess what? We put them into one audio DVD. And everybody at the conference was a little bit blown away with the fact that we had on one audio DVD 252 sermons and messages, right, on one DVD. And that's basically her work. But the brains of the situation is a guy called Ron Whitford. This guy here, he says, "Roy, look, I go to prayer sometimes and I wake up with an idea." And he basically, he works unceasingly to do more with less, to organize things, and basically to serve brethren. We were able, because of the various, oh, he's always buying this program and that program, ringing this expert and that expert, and he's actually managed to get 10 of the Church at Home DVD, so let's see, Church at Home presentations on one DVD. Now, Fred didn't know about it when he wrote his last letter, and he said to me, "Well, I'm going to get this here to Jonathan," and he's going to look into it. But we've got the first 20 in two DVDs already. I've given it to the attendees of the conference, and that's basically due to his diligence and his love to serve, and we love to serve brethren. Now, at this point, I think also, yeah, that's about it, except for one more thing, and that is, I got it in my pocket. Would you believe that I've got in my pocket? Over 60 hours, sorry, 60 days, shall I say, 60 days of Fred Coulter speaking. And here it is. It is an iPod. Right? Now, we're in the process of putting all of the sermons, all the material on the iPod. You know, we can also get the Church at Home presentations on the iPod. In Queensland, what they do, we've got what they do over there with under the direction of a guy called Mr. Gregory Paxton. He puts that down in between two speakers and a little apparatus. He chooses, we for those of you that are not familiar, you turn this way, you turn that way, clockwise or anti-clockwise. It scrolls up, scrolls down the list, right? And then you press the middle when you want to choose, and you got the message there. You know, you can even plug these things in the car. Well, you've got to have the right equipment there, but you plug it in. Imagine you're driving. What do I want to hear today? We've got songs in there. We've got all the hymns. We've got the instrumentals of the hymns. So it's a little bit of technology. And as I've been saying, we like to be effective. We've got to do more with what? More with less, right? It's called leverage. What do we pause after we press? And also, what I want to pass on is greetings from Ken and Dorita G. He's our elder over there in Melbourne, and he basically serves a lot of people in Australia. Well, we'll say a lot of people. We've got 160-odd or 66 or so on our mailing list, and they're all around Australia. I think the furthest point is some 4,000 kilometres over to the west coast. And anyway, greetings from Ken G. And while we speak about Ken, I just want to also say that it was actually Ken's daughter, Glenda, and her husband as well, who helped her helped me start out the CDs, the MP3. I got a call from Ron Whitford one night. He's the fastest talking Australian you ever heard. I thought, slow down. I had something like 100 mailings, and I had to put six tapes on every mailing on my dining room floor there, my function room floor. I run a motel, by the way. I hope not for too long. But anyway, this guy rang me and told me all about MP3, and I thought, what are you talking about MP3? What's this MP3? And as soon as he said, you look, it can put at least 9 Nine? Yeah, nine. Nine sermons on one CD. I thought, I like it. Looking down on the floor, that suits me fine. And so what we did in Australia, we started off with the CDs, and Glenda's the one that helped me physically producing them and so on. And we started off producing the CDs. And when you guys in the States decided to say, okay, we're going to go to CDs, we were actually something like 70% on our mail list on CDs, and 30% we gave the option on tapes. So I think Fred knew that it worked in Australia, so it's got to work over here, he thought. Well, I guess that's it from me. I guess it's not all from me. We've had a great time during this ministerial conference that we've had. We've got a lot of wonderful information. And at this point, I wonder if I could talk a little bit and relate it at the end of what I'm going to say. Talk a little bit about Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. Now, you know, what happened with in the example of the rich man, he looked up proverbially and he saw what? Lazarus where? Where was he? In the bosom where? Of who? Abraham. And we always hear about Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. We hear about the three grouped together. No doubt they will have a function together in the kingdom of God. There's something significant about this three number, isn't there? Anyway, so I'm just going to say off the cuff, if I may, that the amount in Genesis that's dedicated to Abraham and Isaac and Jacob, roughly, Jacob and his family, is about 35% to Abraham. Now, Abraham, the father of the faithful, the one that was faithful to God, who received the promises. 35%. Now, you know what? Isaac only got 7%. It's a roundabout. If you have a look at it, there's not all that much dedicated to Isaac. I mean, he didn't make many mistakes, did he? He made the mistakes of his dad. Well, you know, she's my sister, he said, of his wife. And he loved one son more than the other. And I guess it doesn't say anything about him and Rebecca. He was fine. He loved her, and that's 7%. With someone that doesn't have too many faults, he was taught by Abraham, of whom God said, yeah, he will indeed teach his children. So there's not many faults there, but when we come to Jacob, and we come to the end results of Jacob's life, his family, 58% is what I make it. Around, this is a roundabout, a gut feeling. So why on earth, I ask you today, does Jacob get the lion size of the deal? And the answer is, I don't know. That is, I don't know all of them. But there is one area I think that we all really need to take heed of. And that's what? It's the fact that Jacob and his life and the lessons of his life actually reflect you and me. Reflect us. Because we are full of imperfections. And we are being led, we're being cleaned, we're being taught, we're being trained, we're being, what, changed from what we were to something else. And doesn't the scripture say that we are actually earthen vessels? We're pots of clay, but what's in there? A priceless jewel. Like a diamond. You know, it takes what? It takes heat. It takes pressure. And what else? Time. It takes time to develop that rare gem of incredible value. That gem, the gems that God is fashioning. And so let's have a look at Jacob we're talking about. Yes, let's have a look at Jacob's life. Now, I'm not going to look at all of it. If we'd just like to turn to Genesis 27, verse 1. We get to the point where Isaac is old, and it says, "And it came to pass when Isaac was old, and his eyes were dim, so that he could not see. He called his older son Esau and said to him, 'My son.' And he said, 'Behold, I am here.' And then, as we know, he gave him the instructions to go out and to kill venison and prepare it the way he wanted to prepare it, because he wanted to pass on the blessings to him. So what happens? Now, aside from all this, there's a right way and there's a wrong way. Now, as the situation happened in the family, they followed the wrong way. They could have taken the shortcut, but they didn't. And why didn't they? Because mother and son were like who? Like you and like me. We're imperfect. And this is about a journey. And so if we look at as it goes on, what happened? What happened was that she, the mother, fixed up Jacob, and he said, this is not going to work. He's going to find out that I'm a smooth man. Well, we'll get some goat skins. That'll fix that up. But I don't have his clothes. I'll give you some of his clothes, and he'll smell the field on you. Well, they worked it out very nicely. And as soon as Jacob, whose name was taketh by the heel, I don't think that means much today to us, does it? Taketh by the heel. Perhaps a better name that would strike a chord in us would be something like, how does shyster sound? Swindler. Can you imagine being called, "Hey, shyster"? Is he talking to me or at me? So really, that's what his name meant. Right? His name was not good. Shyster. We'll call him Shyster, just for the effect, not for the... Well, we know his name wasn't that, but for the effect on us, so that we can understand the actual impact of what is happening here. And so what happened in... Let's see, we got verse 18 here. Yeah, verse 18. And he came, that's chapter 27, Genesis, verse 18. And he came to his father and said, "My father." And he said, "Here I am. Who are you?" "My son." And Jacob said to his father, "I am Esau." Jacob said to his father, "I'm Esau, your firstborn. I have done as you've asked. Arise, I pray you." Sit pretty bold, wasn't he? "Sit and eat of my venison, that your soul may bless me." Oh, so he knows about it. So it must be Esau. And Isaac was still a little bit dubious, so he said to him, "How is it that you have found it so quickly, my son?" And he said, well, you know, he was a quick thinker too, "Because the Lord your God brought it to me." Wow. And Isaac said to Jacob, "Come near, I pray you, so that I may feel you." Well, he anticipated that one, didn't he? "I feel you, my son, whether you are truly..." He thought something's cooking here. "So if you are truly my son Esau or not." And Jacob went near to Isaac, his father, and he felt him and said, "The voice is Jacob's voice, but the hands are the hands of Esau." And again, you know, he's still suspicious, isn't he? Something's cooking here. So again, "And he did not recognize him, for his hands were hairy like his brother Esau's. And he blessed him. And he said, 'Are you truly my son Esau?' And he said, I am. What a liar. I am. That's a bull-faced lie. I am, he said. No, you're not. I am, he said. That's the only thing he couldn't disguise, his voice. And he said, bring it to me that I may eat my son's venison. And, you know, as the story went, he held him and he smelled him. Yeah, he smells like him. But how come he doesn't sound like him? Just couldn't work it out. Okay, I'm convinced, he said. Look, I know. No one heard. That's it. And so what happened was, verse 36. Now, we're going to go to verse 36 next. But what was the results? These are the results that happened. These are the consequences of his actions. In verse 36, Esau is there with his dad, and he found out, and he cried out in pain. He's taken away my blessing. And then he calls out, just, you know, poor guy. I mean, he copped it with the lentils, and now he copped it again. Well, I think the two are pretty much the same thing, actually. Verse 36, and Esau said, is he not rightly called shyster? That's what strikes a chord in us, but that's what the word meant then. He's a shyster. For he has supplanted me these two times, he took away my birthright, and behold, now he has taken away my blessing. And he said, have you got one blessing for me? He was in pain. He said, that's it. And later on he said, I'm going to kill him. I'll kill him. And he literally meant it. At this point, I don't know whether anybody has seen this little trick that you do. You know, you put a little red dot on a page and you hold it in front of you and you look at it and you can see it. You know, you move it, you keep your eyes straight and you move it to the right, for example. And there's a point where that dot, guess what happens? It disappears. And you move it a little further and then it reappears. You push it back again, disappears, reappears, and you can keep doing it. You know, we've all got these blind spots, haven't we? We can't see the way we are in the ways God sees that we are. And so what's the result? In our lives, what do? We turn around to our Creator. We turn around to Jesus Christ, and what do we say? Hey, don't mold me that way. Just a minute, he says, I'm creating the vessel. So it doesn't matter what we say. God's going to do what he's got to do. Right? And so what happened was that Isaac again was deceived. So basically what we're talking about, my faults and your faults. We've all got faults, but we can't necessarily see them, can we? We've all got blind spots. And so in Genesis 29:18, what happened is that, as the story went, Isaac was deceived by his wife and by his son. Look, he's got to get a wife out here. Now, Mum had it really planned well. As soon as your brother cools off, I'll call you back and we'll be right. Didn't work out that way, did it? You know, it was easy. 20 years just disappeared like that. He was gone. Finished. That's how she paid for it. But here we see that, you know, guys have got to take, men have got to take charge of their lives. And it doesn't mean they don't love their mothers or love their wives, but they must take charge. So he meets this chick. He loves her. She's really a good-looking one, you know. She's nice eyes, sparkling, beautiful smile. I'm sure that all the men in here remember the time they first met their wives. And they still do have that wonderful sparkle, don't they? Anyway, so, and Jacob loved Rachel, and he said, I will serve to his father-in-law, what was his name? Laban, of course. Laban. Now, Laban was a chief. He was a chief, chiefer, shyster. He's the guy. He's the granddaddy. If you recall what happened when when Abraham's servant went over there, they tried to hold back, Rebecca. Just a minute, they said, that's great. When they saw all the gold, she can come with you. Do you want to go? Yeah, fine. When they saw the gold and all the goodies, they said, well, let us stay for a few days. He tried to hold on. There's some goodies here. And they're about to leave. He wanted to leave. Don't hold me back. Well, we'll ask the maiden and we'll see what she says. Well, you know, she wasn't silly. Hey, the riches are mine, the glory is mine, not yours. So they said, we'll ask her. What does she say? And what did she say? I'm going. So that was it. He couldn't hold any further, and he went. But, you know, his luck was to change when Jacob came over. And so he loved this lovely young lady. In verse 22, we're going to look at that next. So, 7 years I'll serve you for your daughter Rachel. Now, what is a trickster do? How am I going to work it out to not show him this gal and give him the other gal? How is he going to do it? Well, if we look at verse 22, what a fantastic strategy. And Laban gathered together all the men of the place and made a wedding feast. You usually have the bride there, don't you, But somehow, and I don't know, even if the women were there, it would be even worse, wouldn't it? Because Rachel would be dressed as the woman to marry this man, Jacob. And can you imagine what would happen if it happened that way? That dad pulls her back. No, over here. He wouldn't have told her, otherwise she wouldn't have been genuine. She would have been crying. Pulled her overside, just a minute, wait here, daughter. And had someone hold her back while the other one came midnight, no lights. And he slipped the other one in the tent. Now I wonder if we could just pause for a little while and really think of what was happening here. Do you think that Jacob had some special moments with Rachel? I mean, special things that they said during this 7 years. You've got to expand it a little. And during the night of the consummation, don't you think he would have said some of these things to her? And what happened? Not just for one moment, but for all their time together, in the complete, right through embraces and words and all, she what? She lied to him. She lied to him. What was happening? He was getting his own back. How would it feel? And also what happened here is the seeds of turmoil in the future were laid. Why? Because the two sisters, hey, he was my husband, he was supposed to be mine. Oh, well, he's mine now. And they were off for 14 years of fun and games. So that's what happened. He pulled a bit of a Swifty. And in the morning, what I like is in the morning, I'll just read this, verse 25. And it came to pass in the morning that, behold, it was Leah. And Jacob said to Laban, what is this that you've done to me? Didn't I not serve you for Rachel? Why then have you tricked me? Well, as we say there, I think perhaps you might say there that here that that's kind of like the pot calling the kettle black. And if the hat fits, wear it. So who did he see? He saw himself. But you know what? What have we got? Remember that dot? Blind spot. Do you think he saw it straight away? Do you think it was in his character there and then? Probably not. as history has shown after, no, it wasn't. Because he copped it again and again and again. Why? Because he's got a blind spot. Because what? What does it mean to us? Because you and I have got what? Blind spots. Do we realize that? We've got blind spots, all of us. Otherwise we wouldn't be what? Clay. And we didn't need what? To be fashioned into a vessel. We're a lump of clay. That's what we are. And that's what is happening here. That's the example for us to take heed of and take on board. Well, the fun and games lasted for 13 years. He had to serve another 7 years, complete this a week with this one, and then you got two. And they said, I'll want another. I'll give you my hand, mate. I'll give you, boy, as in the past, Fred has said that he would have got home sometimes and said, where are the goats? I prefer to go with the goats. Because of the trouble that was in the home. I've traded you for my son's mandrakes. You're mine tonight. Wow. So finally he breaks free. He broke free. Years passed. In Genesis 31:30, I've got here. So what happens is he's broken free. He's left with his family. He's a smart boy. He wasn't stupid. If he would have said, well, Dad, see you later. No, you don't. I've got more than you. There's more guys with me than there are with you. I'm just going to hold you back. He knew that. So what did he do? He went by night and he did a swifty on him. Anyway, when he caught up, what happened was that he said, and now you have gone... And now you have gone because you longed after your father's house. Why, he said, have you stolen my gods? Your gods? I didn't steal your gods. In verse 32, big mouth. And I don't know why it happened this way personally. So he ends up, he's mad. He says, well, with whomsoever you find your gods, let him not what? Live in the presence of our brethren. Point out what I have done. Bottom line is, the wife of his heart, the one he loved, was the one that stole the gods. So what are you saying? It's come out of your mouth. What are you saying? What's happening? What came out of his mouth before? Oh, yes, I am Esau, your son, your firstborn. It's still coming back to him, isn't it? Like an echo. And how many times do our faults, our sins, come back to us? How many times do we see ourselves and it comes back? So, The greatest trial happened when he had about 400 men. He broke free of father-in-law. That's hurdle number one. But then he had four. Now, you know, it doesn't say that he had 400 men and their wives and a couple of cattle and some camels. No, it was 400 men. What do you mean by 400 men? He left there under the threat of death from his brother. And now his brother comes back with 400 men. So, through one of the greatest trials of his life, I look at this as a point of conversion. This is a point, you know, it's a catalyst, the pressure's on. And so what happens? He really, really seeks God. And so what happens is that he's in trouble. And what does he do? He wrestles all night with an angel of God. Was it Jesus Christ? And he refused to give up. Now, I don't know whether anybody does any exercise, whether you've ever run or cycled. I personally have, in my younger years, which is about 4 or 5 years ago, I used to like lifting weights. And we used to say, you train to failure. And you might be lying down there with a bar and you're pushing and you push till you just can't push anymore and it comes down to your chest. But, you know, to get to that point, you really got to push hard. Now, it's hard to push hard. You see these boxers that fight. And, you know, if you're going to do a couple of rounds, just practice, you know, hitting those bags there. Not bean bags, they're real hard. your arms feel like they're dropping off. We've got to expand that. Now, this guy was wrestling. He refused to give up until he was given a blessing. And his name was changed from Shyster to one who prevails with men and God. That, in a sense, was his conversion, like the point of our conversion, if we take it to heart. Now, you know, you're converted, that's it. Easy street now, not really. So what happens? If we look at chapter 34, verse 25. What had happened, to fill in the details, is these guys had taken Dinah. This prince really loved Jacob's daughter, and a couple of his sons were really sore. And it came to pass, verse 25, on the third day, when they were sore from being circumcised, these men of the village or town, that two of the sons of Jacob, Simeon and Levi, Dinah's brothers, took each his sword and came upon the city boldly and killed all the males. I mean, he's just overcome. He says, you've overcome with men and you've overcome with God. Great, I'm on easy street. When you're baptized, you're on easy street. No way. Doesn't look like it, does it? Things get harder. I'm going to be destroyed. How many people are out there around me? They outnumber me. They're greater than me. I'm finished. What have you done? What have you done? But, you know, it was the end result, because what we do comes back to us. And again, after conversion, after we're baptized, how many times? I think the question that I need to ask myself and you need to ask yourselves is this. Why? Why is this happening to me? Well, it's like this. You're a piece of clay. And you're being fashioned into a vessel. And inside there is a jewel that's got to be subjected to pressure, it's got to be subjected to heat, and it requires time. And for how long? Till you die. It don't finish, does it? Or should I say, it doesn't finish, does it? So, if we look forward again in 35:16, okay, probably he shouldn't have stayed there. He should have moved on, but you know, God has ways of prompting people, doesn't he? We sometimes stay where we shouldn't stay. And God sends a trial. And what is the message of the trial? Move on. Grow. And how many of us have undergone one of these phenomenal trials where the church we've been in was sinking? And if we stayed in there, guess what? We'd have some fantastic oxygen. Nope. We'd be enjoying some spiritual carbon monoxide. So we had to move on, or else. So moving on to 35, Genesis 35, verse 16. I hope I got the right one. And they set out from Bethel, so he decided to, okay, I better move on. And when there was only a short distance yet, Rachel travailed, and she had great difficulty in giving birth. And it came to pass, verse 17, when she was having a great difficulty giving birth, that a midwife said to her, "Do not fear, for you shall have this son also." And it came to pass, as her soul was departing, for she died. Wow. The woman of his heart, the one with the glisten in her eyes, the one he loved. He must have thought back, don't you think, and said, "Why did I open my big, fat mouth?" And how many times do we say, "What have I done?" Or do we say, "What have I done?" Or do we say, "Why is this happening to me?" And what's the answer? There's a dot there, and you can see it, but when it moves to a certain point, you can't see it. And you know, there's different directions and different angles that God has to show us, right? In other words, our difficulties, our trials, let's see, our faults, has to be shown in different ways. We have to be tested in different angles. You know, just like the pressure on a diamond. It's got to be exerted all around. And it doesn't finish, does it? It goes on. So she died. Why, he might say, what is happening? Why is this happening to me? Now, you know, as time went on, what happened? Well, he settled down. And we all know the story of Joseph. He loved Joseph. I mean, some of the love that he had, a lot of the love that he had for his wife who died, went on to this son. And what happened to Joseph? He was taken away from him. He thought, "My son Joseph is dead. He's finished. Why me?" Another massive trial. I mean, has anybody here had a series of massive trials? I mean, I say again, the worst thing that you could probably experience is being predeceased by one of your children. That would, I would say, really knock the stuffing out of you. And quite a trial that you'd have to be reeling. But not even that. If something happens to our children, we just suffer so much. So we say, why me? Well, you know, again, the pressure, the diamonds, all directions for that jewel to be formed. And so as the story continued, finally, in Egypt, not in Egypt, before, during the famine, he realizes, my son's alive. Wow. Do you think at that point, that he may have reflected and thought back at that time, many years back now, that he turned around to his dad and he said, "I am Esau, your firstborn"? And this is after what I would look at, or what we can look at, as a point where the man was really converted. He met God, right? We made a commitment, and it was years after. Do you think he would have thought about that? Do you think it would have come to mind? Perhaps it might have. And as he said to Pharaoh, "My years have not attained the years of my fathers. They have been few and evil." And you know, I wonder if we could turn around and see the pains in our lives and say, well, our years have been few and evil. I'm getting on here, and what's happened? Well, you know what's happened, and you know what's happening. It's all about this jewel that's being formed inside of you. That's life, not what we're going through now. This is just a simulation, a little taste of life. And now, I just want to pause on the story and reflect on a message we received yesterday, where for those that are listening on CD, they probably have heard it already. And for those of you that haven't heard it, well, I'm going to tell you about it. And for those of you that have heard it, you know anyway. Yesterday we got a message with regards to health, physical health, and spiritual health. We need to look after our physical health, but we also need to look after our spiritual health. Well, vitamins and supplements that we need will do it for our physical health. What we need for our spiritual health is what? One word tells it all. To forgive. And if we forgive, if we truly forgive, that in turn will heal. Now, you know, you might say, someone's really shysted me. But you know, you can forgive them. You might say, oh, all right, I've forgiven them. It ain't that easy. Because you don't forgive them, so they're forgiven. Because what happens? Yeah, it comes back, doesn't it? It came back in Jacob's life continually. How long do we have to forgive? Every day, continually, whenever it comes to mind. Until when? Till you die. Quite a point, isn't it? So, after the session, what I did, because I'm a little bit of a stirrer. I like to pull these little surprises on people. So what I did at the end of the session, I don't know whether many of the other delegates saw what I was doing. I went over to Fred and I said, Fred, you know what I need? He said, what? I gotta have a picture of you and that cowbell. So Fred was obliging, and we took a picture of the cowbell. But you know what? It's amazing. I'm used to looking at people because of my work. I work with public and sizing them up and saying, what have I got to do here? Are we friendly? Are we not friendly? Is everything okay? And I'm used to sizing the situation up. That's just what I've always done because of my work. And I noticed that Fred's demeanour changed all of a sudden. And he went all serious. And he looked at me and he said, I hope I have taught them something. I hope I have. And he was looking inside himself whether he actually did the job properly or he didn't. He was really thinking about it. At this point, I just want to tell you about a guy called William James of Harvard. He was a psychologist. Okay, some of them are bad. This guy had some really interesting ideas. He said, whatever is expressed is impressed, and whatever is impressed is expressed. In other words, if we sing, we're happy. And why are we happy? Because we sing. Right? So the way we choose to think, as in water, face answers to face. So the mind of a man or a woman reveals the man or the woman. So the way we think is the way we are. Now, I wonder if we can think back. I'm going to give you a challenge here. Is there someone that you're upset about? Now, if there's no one that you're upset about or ever been upset about, guess what? I don't believe you. But I want you to think about someone. We use this principle of William James here. And I ask that you think of this individual. You think, you visualize this individual. Think about it. Who is it? Who is it that's done something to you? That's upset you? Who is it? Have him there before you. Have her there before you. And then just imagine that you walk up to them and you give them a warm embrace. I want you to hug tightly. And I want you to imagine that they, this individual, is embracing you as well. Just as hard. And I want you to imagine this individual is crying and says, I'm sorry. How does it make you feel? Can you imagine that situation? Okay, we'll burst the bubble. Now, the next time that you see this individual, do you suppose you could at least crack a smile? Because whatever you simulate, whatever you think in your mind, that's the way you are. And, you know, our minds work a certain way. And the experts tell us in a wayward example I'll give you here that if we watch pornography three times, something like that, then it's just as bad as if we've experienced it, you know. But, you know, leave that aside, but take the principle. I ask you to take the principle. And if you imagine being a friend to someone that's hurt you, pretty soon, or eventually, that's going to be a part of you. And guess what? It's not going to happen all at once, is it? It's going to take a lot of time. And so that brings me to my answer to Fred. I said, it's not going to happen all at once. If people are going to forgive, it's going to have to be a habit, because our habits are what make us, what we're used to doing. Who can get in the car and drive in Australia on the other side of the road? A few of you laugh. Why? Because different habits. You agree with me? It's habit. And if we have a habit of saying no, yes here, no there, we're simulating. We're thinking. We're thinking the way we should be thinking, and developing a habit that actually aids and not works against the potter who's moulding the what? The clay. And who's the clay? We're the lump of clay. As the pressure comes from different directions, we're not looking up and complaining and saying, what are you doing? We're saying, okay. And you know, sometimes it's so hard to say okay. So hard. But if we keep on saying okay until the day we die, then guess what? It'll be all behind us. No more clay. Just lights.